Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary Christensen, and I'm hosting the Conversations program this morning on WDRT. I'm happy to have a guest this morning who is from Viroqua, the Viroqua area, grew up here, and is taking a very, I think, unique path in the agricultural world. And so I'm eager for all of us to get to know him and to be inspired, I think, like I am about this track that he's taking. Anyway, Taylor Henry is his name, and we'll first start out, Taylor, by finding out a little bit about you, about your background.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me, Mary. It's an honor. I know a lot about WDRT. I've been following it for a long time. I grew up in Viroqua. I graduated in 2011. And my family's been in the area for a long time. So Viroqua is just a special place. I only moved away for 4 or 5 years and ended up coming back. So I'm happy to be back and happy to be doing business in this area.
Mm-hmm. So you talked to me beforehand about, I guess, having the support of your family and people.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about this, how you got right into this? You went away a little while, but then you came back and you got some land.
Yeah. So I graduated from Viroqua. I went to college, went to a couple different places. Definitely was not made out to be the normal college person. So I jumped around a little bit, went to Dubuque my freshman year, went to then UWL is where I ended up, lived in La Crosse for a while. Jumped into being a police officer when I was 20 and then became a cop. Was a cop around this area for a year and a half and then was a cop in La Crosse for 4.5 years. After those 4.5 years, I knew for sure being a cop, I wasn't going to be able to buy any land, and that ended up being my main passion in life. So I jumped into the entrepreneurial world, moved out of my place in La Crosse and bunked up with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Until
Your parents have a farm?
No. I grew up in town. I have no real ag background. We had a family farm that my dad grew up on that I spent a lot of time on when I was a kid, and my passion originally around land was about hunting. I have a little bit of a obsessive personality, and one of the first obsessions following sports was hunting. So I spent a lot of time out at our family farm, trapsing around the woods, figuring out how land worked and how animals moved along the land. So that was my first obsession. But as far as an ag background, nothing. I just, when we first decided to buy a farm, I thought there has to be a way to help pay for the land,
right,
in some way, shape, or form. And the first thing that came to my mind was cattle, because they're, you know, very closely related to deer, both being ruminant animals. And I was obsessed with studying deer and how they acted. And I knew cattle, just that idea of them was very interesting to me. But the first few people I talked to about it said, no way, you're not going to be able to do anything with cattle that would help pay for the land, essentially. So I dove into...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because everybody around here has cattle.
I know,
but
it's... Not a lot of people have cattle who have bought a new farm at these prices.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. I think that was their main point. And just having someone come up to people who have had cattle for a long time, me being someone with no experience, talking to someone with tons of experience saying, I want to get into cattle, it's not super likely that you're going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say that we've necessarily succeeded as cattle farmers yet, but we've come a long ways, and we have a really good start where I think we've developed a system that is and can be successful.
Seems like when that was occurring for you, the grazing movement was taking off too, right? The whole idea of buying direct and buying grass-fed and everything. Was that just starting then? Or?
Yeah, so my first businesses after being a cop were video production, and then it slowly morphed into a marketing agency. So in that marketing agency, we worked with people who had, we were actually marketing to marketers, and we were in this space of online, I guess, businesses that helped marketers market their products to their audience. And part of that was having a book on the front end of your product line and then having courses and events on the back end.
Interesting.
So I had this experience where, you know, in that world, people were developing areas to gather, areas to meet. So part of the real estate play was, if we get this farm, you know, do things and show it as an example for other people, and then people would gather and come, and it would help pay for the land on top of whatever else you were doing. But the idea originally was around hunting. So set up the farm to have success with hunting. People would come out and view it and actually, you know, pay to walk around your place.
Yeah, and don't you have an Airbnb?
Yep. So we luckily the farm that we bought had two houses on it, completely run down old houses that we fixed up. And then 6 months after we bought that farm, the place that the people we bought the farm from, they had moved just down the hill. It was actually a connecting piece. They had built a brand new Amish cabin and were living in it. They only lived in it for a couple months and then listed it. And we bought that, and that turned into an Airbnb. And then the second house on our main farm, we also turned into an Airbnb for a short period, and now it's a long-term rental.
I see. Interesting. Boy, we're jumping right up to today, and I wanted to hear a little bit more about things like, so you said you had this obsession about hunting, but so I remember reading about you when you were a wrestling champion in the 90s, right?
No,
in the 2000s,
come on,
I guess.
No, come on.
No, okay.
I graduated in 2011, so yeah.
I'm aging myself, but I used to read the paper. Anyway, so usually there is something like discipline, focus, you know, characteristics in a person to succeed at that high level.
Yeah.
And, I'm thinking that's probably those values and that discipline and that accomplishment is what carries you now also.
Well, it was definitely the first thing that gave me the confidence to say that essentially anything I put my mind to, I can accomplish.
Okay.
As long as you keep moving forward. And you know, especially with wrestling, when you're wrestling at a high level, you get embarrassed in front of a lot of people. So it's not the end of the world to fail, because you fail often, and usually it's in front of a large crowd and it's just you out there and there's no other person you can really turn to. So the accountability, to say that I have control over what I do, and if I lose, it's my fault. If I win, it's probably something to do with the process that brought me to that. So discipline has a huge role in that, and it's played well in business, because business is a lot longer game. You don't get that quick reassurance that you're moving in the right direction always, but it's kind of the same idea. If you do these little things day after day after day after day, you look back after months or years and say, "Wow, I came a long ways," even though it might not feel like that.
True.
Day to day.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's what we're told, and that is true. But you've been fortunate to experience it often enough, I guess, to bank on it.
Yeah. Well, my life experiences have been, you know, I'm only 31, but I've lived a lot of different lives. Like becoming a cop when you're 20, you get to learn a lot about people and about the community and how to communicate with people, and that's lended very well to me in business as well.
I'm sure. Yeah. And this dance between authority and respect, and you know, that like you.
Well, and it that taught you, being a cop taught me how to understand people's perspective and their situation. And you know, whether it's empathy or whatever you want to call it, it's understanding people where they're at. mm-hmm. and understand that they have a lot different life experience than you. And, you know, people aren't necessarily wrong or right, but, you know, it usually comes back to the way they were raised and their life experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you being able to be observant and witnessing that and respecting it.
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge part of it.
Yeah, I mean, that has a lot to do with my parents' upbringing, too. Like, it was just, you know, you were meant to be kind and helpful. And my parents, my mom was a teacher for a long time. My dad was a cop for a long time. So I grew up in that public servant type
right.
lifestyle.
Good point. Yes. I know I come from a family with a lot of kids, and we still talk about, yeah, mom, she's always telling us, be a peacemaker. You know, don't get into that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was burdensome, but we all remember it as being very important and formative.
I think it is important. I think, you know, having, that's part of the reason I came back to Viroqua too, because when I came back to Viroqua, most of the business was online. And it was kind of nice. Like I could live in obscurity, run a business, have nothing really to do with the community. But I had that longing to get involved with the community, because Viroqua is, you know, an important piece of my story, important piece of my life, and being involved in the community, you know, ended up being an important function. And that's when I started the real estate business, to at least do some business here locally and work with people in the community. And then, you know, I ended up being the Viroqua football coach for the last 3 years, and that was kind of my way to volunteer and not necessarily volunteer, but it kind of is a volunteer. You don't want to go under the hourly wage of being a football coach, but that was my way to give back to community as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. So one of the things that you did recently, or I don't know, a couple years ago, is to get into and take on a new business called Acres USA.
Yeah, it's been just over a year now. So to go back a little bit, when we bought the farm, the first, you know, like I said, as an entrepreneur, you figure out ways to pay for the assets that you buy. My first idea was a sod farm, and luckily in the same week I read the book Dirt to Soil. And if you ever read the book Dirt to Soil, Gabe Brown has in that book 5 key principles of soil health. And when I ran the test of those principles to a sod farm, it didn't necessarily match out.
Right.
So I was like, all right, if we're going to go down this road, it has to fit in the principles that Gabe outlines here in this book. Because the book was truly moving to me. It just, Gabe actually is a similar parallel to me, where he did not grow up on a farm, ended up moving out to a farm, was obsessed with agriculture, and became a successful person after a lot of heartache too. So
how did that book come into your hands?
You know,
remember?
I've always been big on reading books. You know, the way I jumped into business, it wasn't just, you don't just come out of being a cop and go right into business, and they don't necessarily translate. So the last year I was a police officer, I read over 100 books in the squad car on being an entrepreneur in business. So that was always like my problem solving mechanism was, okay, if I'm going to try to do this thing, then I need to go learn about it. And books were the avenue, books and courses. I did the same thing with farming. When I knew we were going to buy the land, I jumped into farming books, agricultural books, books about land and soil health. And I read 100 books in a year.
I see. Did you get a lot of those off of the Acres USA website?
So then I found Acres, because the second book I read was Restoration Agriculture by Mark Shepard. And I realized that, because you know, when you're entering into this world, you tend to pick the most popular books, which Dirt to Soil is probably the most popular. Restoration Ag is probably second or third in that niche. Mm-hmm. And I realized Mark was 20 minutes from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, this is, I always knew our area was very popular for agriculture, but I didn't realize that one of the most well-known authors is right in our back door, essentially. So I read and listened to Mark's book probably 4 times that winter driving around, and I would drive around the perimeter of his farm.
Oh, gosh.
I went and stalked his farm, because it's rare. Like Gabe's book, I couldn't see actually what he was referring to.
Yeah.
Mark's farm, I could drive around and actually look into it from the outside and I get a little bit more of an understanding of what the book was talking about. So finally, I mean, similar to this, it came down to a podcast. At the time, I had a podcast about hunting. So Mark's ideas actually fit really well into hunting management because you're planting these trees and woody crops that, you know, deer love, as well as, you know, creating these edge and borders that are higher diversity that all wildlife likes. So that was the first time we knocked on Mark's door and said, hey, let's do a podcast. He was more than willing to do that. And then ever since then, we've been working together, and he's kind of he's the gateway to Acres.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick station break because we'll come back to this. And this is a good place. You're listening to The Conversations on WDRT FM here in, it's 91.9 FM in Viroqua. Also streaming on WDRT.org. And after a week, it will go onto the archives as a podcast, and you can access it there if you want to come back to this. And today I'm Mary Christensen interviewing Taylor Henry from Viroqua. Okay, Taylor, so now getting into Acres, getting to know Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark, like I said, some of the business background was working with people who had books, courses, and events. And so I was helping Mark develop a course and helping him do some marketing for his book. When really you're the publisher, you kind of, that's is your responsibility. So he gave me some insight that maybe there wasn't as much marketing taking place with Acres that there should have been.
True, because that's where his books were.
Yeah, all of his books are published with Acres, yeah. So we started doing some things on the side. And the first course that we published with him did really well. And I was like, wow, this is actually a pretty hypersensitive or hyperactive niche to be in. So for a while, the thought process was to create a parallel, create a similar type business as a startup. But if you ever get into business, it is always easier to buy an existing business with, you know, a lot of history than create a whole startup on your own.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So that's when the idea of acquiring Acres came about. I hunted down the corporate CEO that was the owner of, or the person that was running the corporate entity that owned Acres. Sent him a message on LinkedIn, and that started a 2-year back and forth negotiation type thing. And we finally closed on it last December.
Boy, that's impressive. LinkedIn, a little message. That's amazing, isn't it?
It's, I guess that's probably a story of just, I mean, there's a lot of business that evolves around hunting and hustling. And you learn that in the land side and real estate side of things where, you know, if someone has something, you can usually find their contact info and reach out, and it never hurts to ask.
Right.
So it wasn't for sale. It just, I just asked, and now it became for sale.
Mm-hmm. But it was at a time, I went on the website and I looked at the history and I read about the founder, Charles Walters, and he was an inspired person.
Yeah, he's an incredible human.
Yeah. So he started this thing to promote economically healthy and ecologically founded farming and animal husbandry and all things of that nature, feeling that we needed a big shift in that field. I mean, that whole field, that to stop basically poisoning ourselves and our water and our animals and everything. So that's a big story, and that's the story that I was really interested in the 70s when I had read Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, and all of that, and got very interested in our food system.
Yeah, Silent Spring's still a title that we carry. Mm-hmm. So Charles, he's an economist. He was an economist, and he grew up on a farm in Kansas. So he had some experience with, you know, coming up through essentially the Dust Bowl, and his family, you know, struggled through that. And he became an economist, and he got into publishing in the agricultural niche. Him, along with, if you're familiar with Rodale, and then NOFA, were these three people, along with Charles, that came together, and they're like, we need to create something. And they started having, you know, I think smaller events together. And in the early 70s, they all split off and created their own thing. So Charles split off and created Acres USA in 1971. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was a monthly publication or magazine. Those are all really newspapers. And it slowly morphed into publishing books. You know, Charles obviously was a gifted writer. You know, at our conference in Madison this year, Joel Salatin got broke down into tears talking about how impressive of a communicator and writer Charles Walters was.
Wow.
I mean, he's just, I'm never going to be what Charles Walters mm-hmm. was. You know, his name is on, I think, 18 to 20 of our books. Mm-hmm. So the guy was just, I mean, prolific mm-hmm. in writing. Mm-hmm. So over those years, Acres grew and became, you know, kind of the standard in this new niche that wasn't very popular. Mm-hmm. So they came up through the all-natural movement, the sustainable movement, the organic movement, and now we're into this regenerative movement. You know, and he always coined it as ecological agriculture. Mm-hmm. And the tagline was always, in order for agriculture to be economical, it must be ecological.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's impressive. I mean, to just put it right out there, it is pretty simple of a statement. And then, but like you just mentioned, how we came up through natural, sustainable, organic, regenerative. We always, what can I say? We always need to articulate what those two things are, that economical and ecological. And I think that's where our brains go into creating standards and regulations and all those things when, gee, should it be that detailed, or can we get to it in a more direct way? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he was, it's kind of hard to determine for sure where his mindset was. I think of him a lot as like a libertarian type person, where he believed in you know, free trade, where he warned against any sort of government regulations. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, we have talks where he's talking about organic while it was still coming up, and he warned, I don't know if it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, any time when the government get their hands on something and start regulating it, then it changes the scope of what you're trying to do.
Exactly. And we actually have seen that. We can follow it all the way through.
And that's what's interesting about all the recordings we have of him, because what he was saying in the late 80s or early 90s, mm-hmm. you know, we're living it. It happened. You know, organic got, you know, organic is still a really important subsector of our agricultural, you know, community, but it has been, you know, it's big corporation now, it's big mm-hmm. business. And, you know, regenerative is on that same track, because now the big talk of regenerative is creating standards and creating, I guess, the regulations, and not regulations yet, but creating this standard of putting the stamp of approval on saying that this is regenerative and this is what regenerative is.
Yeah, it's a kind of accreditation process. And mm-hmm. A lot of things, schools have to be accredited, hospitals, you know, all sorts of organizations. And I can see why, you know, it has this, we're so far removed from the source. Like, people who live in cities, for sure, they're really removed from the farms. They don't know what they're getting. So this stamp of approval and standardization sometimes is the way it goes. But I, for one, am glad to live here where I can go directly to so many places and see for myself. It isn't like the excellence shows itself in the product and in the person raising it.
Well, we definitely live in a hub here that is unique. For a community of this size to have the options that we have, it's not standard across the country. You know, the farmers that we're working with in all the different places in the country, like, they don't have these markets necessarily readily available to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it comes back to the important teachings of what Acres always was about. It always drove people or drove farmers to think about the marketing side. So don't just think about the production, but think about where your product's being sold and create situations where you can actually name your price and have control over the sale of it. If you think about it, all farmers are entrepreneurs and business owners. Mm-hmm. That's probably one of the only business scopes that don't allow you to necessarily name your price. You know, mm-hmm. you have the control over the production of the product, but then you don't have control over, you know, what you sell it for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an element that needs work.
It is. I mean, technology has come a long ways, and the fact that a farmer can, you know, throw a website up and market their products, it's not that simple. I think in the early 2000s, it was kind of that simple. But now, you know, most farms that are doing any sort of direct-to-consumer type selling have their own website. So it's also a little bit, it's difficult. It's difficult because I think it's unfair in some ways to say that the person who wants to, you know, make their living on the land, not necessarily be bothered mm-hmm. by people, not necessarily be doing the customer support side of the business, mm-hmm. to tell them that, hey, there's this whole other business that you need to create on the back end of the business that you're already doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough thing to do, and mm-hmm. you know, where is the education and training on that? And mm-hmm. you know, that's where Acres has always kind of filled that gap.
Mm-hmm. And here, one way that we as a community have addressed that, or at least entered into conversation about it, is at the Food Enterprise to have the Fifth Season Cooperative. One of the real missions in creating that was to have a better playing field for the producers and pricing, have all the people in the chain connected to set price.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's...
It's a pretty visionary.
It really is, and because that's a whole other topic, and, you know, you have all of these, I guess, cogs in the chain of getting food to people, and if a farmer wants to tackle all of those things, that's not an easy task.
Right.
You know, you have examples of them. If you ever looked up... you know, Will Harris in Georgia, you know, massive, massive operation. They're around regenerative agriculture. They employ over, I think, 100 people. And, you know, they've turned a small community probably like the size of Lafarge, and they're kind of the economy around that small community.
Mm-hmm.
But they have processing facilities. They have production facilities. They have stores. They have, you know, you name it, they have it. But it's, you know, 30 different businesses operating under one umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily it's not an easy thing to read.
Sort of like the company store.
Yeah.
If you think about it, most little communities started some way in that. They needed the grocery store, the butcher, to market the products that were being raised before the big push to urbanization. But the company store, that's what the Harris farm would be, kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're they're everything. I mean, yeah. He has created a model that pretty much covers the whole production line,
mm-hmm.
But they also have, you know, a lot of land at their disposal, so they can do that. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was one of the first people that had a contract with Whole Foods, and, you know, that's not necessarily the easiest thing to get either. Mm-hmm. You need a lot of product, and you can't let your... you can't have a month where you don't have product when you
right.
have contracts like that.
True.
So it's not an easy avenue to go down either.
Right. Well, let's see. Let's get back a little bit to Acres and you making this proposal and getting it. Do you have a vision, or did you, you know, do you see this as a service to all of the farmers in this, or producers in this natural, organic, regenerative world? Do you have a way that you're going to, I don't know, change it, develop it, extend it?
Yeah, I would say evolve it is the best way to put it. So we had a magazine. We have a magazine that has been published monthly since 1971. And if you know anything about the magazine business, it's not a great business to be in at this point in time. You know, the paper industry has jumped in pricing. People don't necessarily love physical magazines arriving at their door anymore. So I refer to it kind of like a snowball rolling down the hill, and you jump in front of it and try to stop it. That's what the magazine side of the business is kind of like. And then we have the book side of the business, where we published 127 titles, and then we carry an additional 350 titles from either self-published or other publishers around the country. So we have right around a product list of, you know, 450 different books that we sell. So that really is a e-commerce business. It, you know, at one point it was in the back of their magazine, and they would, you know, before e-commerce was a thing, and they'd take orders through the mail. And then the other side of the business is the events. So we have one large conference and trade show every year, and next year will be our 50th annual EcoAg conference. So those things all existed, and it really is, it's a complex business in the sense that you have three different individual businesses kind of working under one umbrella. And one thing that's happened in this industry is, I guess where I come in is, you know, it, you said, is it a service? It's still a business, and it's a for-profit business that needs to make money. And I think it was kind of ran like a nonprofit, or ran like a business that necessarily didn't need to make money. And you can get caught into that trap, and I think a lot of organizations do in this area, where of course, yes, we want to help people as much as we can, but there is a lot of expenses and operating overhead that needs to be covered. And, you know, for a business to succeed and live on for a long time, it needs to be profitable.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and it, yes. And it follows with what Charles Walters said, everything has to be economical too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the biggest things that farmers wrestle with is, it is difficult to ask people to pay. You know, this is part of the reason. If you think about it from the psychology of a farmer, it is really nice just to send your product out and get paid for it without having to argue about the price or do the sales side or customer support side. But I think people have a lot of a hard time with actually asking for the value back from what they created. And that goes with not just farming businesses, it goes with a lot of businesses. And what happens then is, you know, you try to make everyone happy, and a business then can't operate, or it becomes something that it wasn't supposed to be. And I will guarantee you that Charles Walters never ran this business as a free giveaway or a thing that didn't make money. It has to make money. But beyond that, so we have those three kind of arms of the business, and we're adding in online functionality of it. So we've created a portal that gives our magazine members an opportunity to then go online and go through all of the old archival material that we have. So we inherited like 500 MP3 files from conference recordings over the years.
How many?
I think there's like 500. And those were kind of like hidden on the site. You know, they were available, but they weren't really pushed, and they weren't readily available. So what we've done is we've created a online portal that part of the magazine membership gives people access, and you know, you can go through 50 years plus of all this material, and you can find something that resonates with you. On top of that, then we're actually creating more in-depth courses that go along with our books. But then, you know, anyone who consumes information, they consume them in different ways. So whether we consume them through audio, video, print, we want to make sure that we have all those options readily available to them.
It's amazing. I mean, just in the last 5 years. I normally wouldn't have done this sort of work. My job was just intense, being socially connected all the time. But I retired, and then I had all this time, and then I started getting connected that way and taking courses, and it's amazing how many people can sign up for something. You know, to be on a course with 150 people, you think, well, I could probably make some money off of this.
It is. I mean, it is a good business model, and it's a lot cheaper than college.
No kidding.
So it's kind of looking at the business models that colleges have, and, you know, we're putting together, I would say, just as good of information and as good of, you know, you end up in just as good of a place. And a lot of these things aren't in colleges either. So
true.
We want to create a parallel education system that's affordable. You don't have to go out and take a $40,000 loan to get 1 year of of education. You can do that in a lot more reasonable price point. And the online courses, I mean, that's how I educated myself. My college degree is in law enforcement management or something. I mean, I've never used it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did.
Kind of.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It doesn't look like it's such a direct link to how we make money.
But the relationships I made in college were a lot of the reasons, you know, the person who introduced me to all of this online business was someone I met when I was a freshman in Dubuque. And we reconnected, you know, 6 years later, and I wouldn't have had this information if it wasn't for that.
Yeah. That's what I always say. College is like this culture. It's an important part of our bigger culture, but if you don't know anything about it, like, it's a lot to not know about, because a lot does happen there. It's like meetings, you know, happens in between the workshops and in between. There's just the networking, the discipline to study, the, you know, realizing there's a way to study, finding out your own strengths and weaknesses in that realm, and also what you're interested in, because there's just so much more shown in the world.
So and, you know, online courses give people an opportunity to consume information at their own pace, too, which for me, a person who I struggled being in a class, I thought it was more interesting to teach myself the material in a class and then pass the test at the end of it than actually going and sitting in class. And I think everybody's a little bit different, but I always felt like, put me in a classroom and I feel like I'm in a cage.
Right.
And but I was more than willing to learn about stuff, but it was usually at my own pace. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I'm as self-taught through books and courses as it gets, and I guess that's the opportunity I want to create for other people.
Mm-hmm. Great. So this is a way for, I mean, I know that there are a lot of, I meet people like yourself that, I mean, we have no background in agriculture, but we know that it's an important social issue. We know it's an important lifestyle to keep going. I mean, if we didn't keep it alive and thriving here, we wouldn't have the environment that we like, that we came to Viroqua for.
Yeah.
It's so there is this reciprocity between, you know, those who do it and those who want it, because that's the environment they want to live in.
Well, and I think for me, there was just something inside of me. Like, I don't know what it was. I just was drawn to the land and doing and manipulating and doing things with the land. I think a lot of people have that. And the positive side that I didn't grow up in an agricultural situation was I didn't have any preconceived ideas. My first ideas came from these books. That so I didn't have this, you know, the university teachings, or I didn't have those preconceived ideas, and I didn't have the preconceived pains that came with, you know, being a farmer all those years either. So it's, you know, sometimes it's easy for me to get up and talk about, and I think a lot of people do that, where it's easy, well, just drop the chemicals, do this, do that, but there's a lot of years of experience that are difficult to make those choices.
True, yeah. Well, let's take another break here. Remind people you're listening to Conversations. I'm Mary Christensen this morning, talking with Taylor Henry, and you're listening to Conversations on 91.9 WDRT radio here in Viroqua. It also streams on WDRT.org, and this program will be archived and into a podcast that you can listen to later and share with others. So we were just, you made a good point there, Taylor. Sometimes when we're growing up in a space, we take on a lot of it, and when we don't necessarily see the cracks in it or know how to change it, or we're super invested, and if we personally aren't, our family, you know, all the network we live in is, and it kind of keeps us a little bit, I wouldn't say it has to be stuck, but keeps us there, keeps us with a certain viewpoint that doesn't widen out a little bit more to see opportunities. But so I think that's a really important point, because as I meet young people who are moving here who want to do something, they want to be part of this movement, it can feel like I can't do it because I don't have a background. I can't do it because I don't, have the money to get into the farming. I can't buy the land. I mean, there are lots of things that create barriers, but you're showing us how you successfully entered into it.
Yeah.
And having this awareness about business and communication and networking is super. I mean, you have to have those skills.
Well, and can't is my anti-word. I refuse to use the word can't.
Good point.
Because if you replace the word can't with how can I, it changes your perspective on, what you can accomplish. So I can't afford this property, or how could I afford this property? It's a much different perspective to tackle it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing goes along with farming. I can't farm because of all these different things. Well, how could I farm? And it's what I see with people that want to come in and they get bit by the bug, similar to how I got bit by the bug, is it's a problem-solving thing. There is no easy way to get in on this. And I think a lot of people get caught up on the fact, I want to own my own farm and I want to do all of it myself, where usually the best opportunities come with people who are like-minded that are already doing it. And most of the time those people offer, either internships or part-time work.
Mm-hmm.
And those opportunities are all over the place. I think what happens, though, is when you jump into this and you're not used to agriculture, we kind of forget about the thing that is probably the most important thing, where it is an awful lot of work.
It is.
It is an awful lot of work. I was fortunate to where, before I bought Acres, my main businesses were, I had a marketing agency and then I did real estate. But really, the first couple of years I was farming, I really was a full-time farmer while doing those other things. So I learned how much actual work went into it. You get to learn the systems and the areas that I wasted money or I wasted time. And if you can go through those hard knocks and not die or lose everything, then you come out the other side where with your own system, your own process, that is repeatable. Probably the most important thing that Mark told me, Mark Shepherd, is because I was like, the first couple of years, I'm like, well, I'm just going to do this full time then. I'm just going to be a farmer. I'm going to try to get out of all the other things that I'm doing and just do this, because it's something inside of you. You wake up every morning, go put your feet on the ground and go interact with animals, and it is intoxicating. You want to do it all the time. That's all you want to do. And there's something to do with farming too, where if you could just have that market and you could just hang out with your animals, hang out with your land, and never talk to another human being in the world and never leave your farm, that is a pretty nice situation. And that was a situation I wanted to create, and that's a tough one to create. And it's tough when you want to do all these other things. Like I'm, kind of like that, where's the bird? And I go chase the bird. That mindset that a lot of entrepreneurs have, which that's where the discipline comes in to stay focused. But I definitely resonate with that. I understand the attraction to just being on the land. But like Mark's biggest thing he said to me is, don't quit your day job. Not yet.
Not yet.
because that off-farm income is really important. And now we use it as, you know, the off-farm income is the avenue for us to go get more mm-hmm. and to help scale the farming business. And the farming business to me is our retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can get 100 acres paid for and 100 cattle paid for,
mm-hmm.
then I'll, you probably won't see me again.
That's, this sounds a little bit like holistic resource management. We had studied that a little bit, where 50% of what you make in a given year has to just be put aside and only really plan to utilize the 50. The 50 has to go because you're always needing to reinvest or for the ups and downs and the things that just happen.
Yeah, I'd say probably the biggest lessons, some of the most important lessons in that year of reading all those books about entrepreneurship and business, you know, there's this overlap with investing that comes into that world.
Oh, yes. That's
and I got really into the idea of real estate investing and, you know, buying apartment complexes or duplexes and creating this, you know, so to speak, passive type income, which that's what is it is presented as always.
Yeah, what and do you think about that?
It never is.
I've been having this conversation with my daughter, and she said, I want this passive income. I said, good luck. My passive income is my Social Security check.
Yeah, that might be the only thing that's actually passive, but that was a lot of years of putting into that.
No kidding.
It's not. It's a. I'm glad I learned that stuff, but it put me in a different mindset originally that was almost impossible, to where you want to create this passive. Well, it's not really possible until you put all the work in. Now, once you put the work in, the processes are set up and the systems are in place, then it could be passive. But as we know, like when I bought that farm or first bought our real estate, you know, the dynamics have changed a lot since then. So the model that worked for that, by us buying this farm, getting the Airbnbs, that model is already obsolete, and it's 5 years later.
Yeah.
You know, but learning about how money works, learning about how banks work, interest rates, all of those things, I think might be the most important part. So any young person looking to get into this, you've got to learn the economics first. You got to learn how interest rates work, how loans work. You know, if you are gifted, or if you've been gifted, or you have the opportunity where you have, you know, an inheritance or a lot of money, it's still important to learn how those things work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen a lot of people jump into this world with, you know, cash or an inheritance, and nobody likes seeing money leave their account. So as much as you would love to say that it doesn't matter if we make money, I hear that all the time. All the people I've worked with that have bought land, they may have kept that energy or attitude for a year, but after a year, it is about not watching your bank account just dwindle down.
Right.
So that economic side and understanding how money works is really important.
Good advice. And how do you learn that?
Well, I learned it through studying real estate investors,
mm-hmm.
And how they did different things. You know, creating, it's essentially problem solving. It's like, well, I can't afford that because I have this amount of money in my bank account. And the question should be, how can I,
mm-hmm.
and what different things can I do? Because once you get in the game of real estate, then there is a lot of opportunities that open up once you're in it for a couple of years and you mm-hmm. build those assets up and you actually do have some equity in your assets, because then you can leverage different things here, leverage different things there. But, you know, I definitely don't recommend anyone jumping in and buying this massive farm. It's usually a lot smarter to start off a little bit smaller and build your way up. I think a lot of the guys that we talk to that come from, you know, growing up through the 70s and 80s, they always say, build up your business, take the cash, and that's the only thing you invest in the future. Stay away from loans. I don't necessarily fit into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've leveraged capital and loans, and I've been creative in where we get it from. And I think that's an important thing to learn while understanding how risk adverse you are.
Right.
You know, I think to me, I'm willing to take risks. You know, mm-hmm. what I'm willing to take as risk now that I have kids and a family, my risk averseness is
lowering.
Came down.
Yeah.
When I was first getting started, I was like, I'll do anything.
Yeah.
I'll do anything to get some, to get land or get a loan or whatever it was. But now that I've matured a little bit and you have, and you see a family, then those things change. But that's also important to jump into that when you don't have anything mm-hmm. holding you down too, mm-hmm. which is, I'm glad I did it when I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see that. I'm in my own life too. It's true. Things change, but every year of experience is a year of experience, and that's like an asset too.
It really is.
You know, it's really
my biggest weakness is the fact that I haven't lived more years on this earth.
Yeah, when people, yeah, sometimes I get into these conversations and I go, "Oh, you'll live another 25 years. You'll learn a lot."
And my anyway. Ideas will. I mean, my ideas have changed so much in the last 5 years. You know, I came out questioning. When I first started learning these things, I did the thing where I pointed the finger at the conventional farmer. Like, well, why would you do it that way? Why would you do it this way? Because when you do read books and you do take courses, those are very blanket type ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing, like Gabe Brown adjusted, they have 6 soil health principles now, and the one they added was context. And to add yes. context into your situation, you have to take any decision or any type of learning process, and you have to put your context into that situation, because no one's going to give you the silver bullet. Mm-hmm. I think people get upset a lot and like, well, this person, I read this book and they told me I could do this and just buy a bunch of apartment complexes. And it's like, but there was no context in that with your situation. There's no market context with what you're trying to accomplish. So you have to create that context through your learning process.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. And you have to be this lifelong learner. That sounds like who you are.
You have to be, and that's the biggest thing. That, you know, as I've talked to all these people, you know, I never would have dreamed 4 or 5 years ago when I'm reading Joel Salatin, Gabe Brown, Mark Shepherd, all these people's books that I'd be able to get them to come to our conference the first year either. So I get to sit in a room and have in-depth conversations with the people that, you know, my idea was, as long if I could just get in the room with these people mm-hmm. and get the information from them, then I'll be a successful farmer
mm-hmm.
and I'll be able to do this. This will be my life. And their messages are all intertwined and similar in the sense, but all of them, the main ones are you can't give up and you need to be a lifelong learner.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's had a lot of success is a lifelong learner, in my opinion. And they're just this unwillingness to give up, because another thing with, you know, what people don't incorporate with the decision making of as far as starting a farm is there is a ton of work, but most likely you're going to have situations that happen that are what would appear to be like detrimental to the whole operation. There's going to be situations that come up that are like, well, I'm not going to be able to make it from this. You know, Gabe Brown experienced 3 straight years of hail damage to his crop where they took in 0 money from a cash crop. They could barely make the interest payments on their operating lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every person has that story where mm-hmm. it seemed like it was going to be the end of them, mm-hmm. but they did not give up and they kept learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, that's a human spirit. That is what we are. That's not AI.
No, no.
That's the difference,
yes.
as far as I'm concerned.
It's the entrepreneurship yeah. spirit. It is what the true meaning of being an entrepreneur is that I don't know one entrepreneur that just is batting 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more like you're batting 100 and you hope that one thing mm-hmm. that you hit on does well.
Yeah. And you can have these 3 bad years. And then also sometimes we can be graced by something. And that's also a miracle sometimes that just comes into our lives. And it's not part of the business plan, but wow. So nice when it happens.
As long as you're still active and moving forward, there's good things that do happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end here now, Taylor. So I wonder if you want to give us any, website information, contacts. The other thing is, so let's do that. But also, is there a little network around here that people could key into to, you know,
well, there is, you know, like the Valley Stewardship Network is a really good nonprofit in the area that does a lot of cool stuff with farmers. We have at least one on-farm event that we'll have in the summer. We had our first one this past summer, and you know, there's a lot of different groups. Like there's the Viroqua Biodynamic Alliance or something like that
group
that meets and works together. But we are in a unique area where if you want information and you want to find people that are doing like-minded type stuff, you're in the right place. So you can always find that. As far as our website, Acres is acresusa.com. You can essentially find anything that we're doing on there. My real estate website is driftlessregionland.com. And then we sell grass-finished beef. We run hogs on pasture in the summer, so we have pork. And you can find that at henrypastures.com.
It seems like there were also some grazing or some events for people to
go. Yeah, so we're heading over to a conference called Grassworks in the end of January, the 21st to the 23rd, I believe that date is. We'll be there with our bookstore that's in the Dells. That organization, I think, is actually out of Lafarge.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Grassworks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are some really great organizations around here, people doing good things. It would be nice to have a little bit of a portal or something for people.
If you get the magazine, you'll see all the events on our event schedule.
Okay.
Not necessarily local here, but, you know, our area is unique in that sense. Like Marble Seed is used to be Moses. Is in La Crosse again this year in February. We'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
There is plenty of educational options in this little region.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there one last, we've got a minute left here. Anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to say to our friends?
Not really. I just appreciate all the local support that we've gotten. I think a lot of people knew about Acres in this community, and they're excited to see it come here. We brought it from Colorado, and now we have all the books and the bookstore and everything right here in Viroqua. And
you have a fulfillment center here?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we turned an old machine shed into a warehouse and office, and now the books get a nice view of all the cattle grazing every day.
All right. That's great. Well, I've just really appreciated your openness and willingness to come here today, not knowing each other before today, really, except, you know, through word of mouth. And when I saw Mark last week, I said, I want to interview him. I said, go for it. He's really a good guy. Do that.
Well, Mark downplays his impact on me, but he's a large reason why I'm here. So thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome.